Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello, yes.
We've got a lady, thank you. Two ladies.
Excellent. Have we all bought our Three tickets? Ladies. Have we all bought our tickets? Are you all legally allowed to be
feels
here?
Feels like the worst place to sneak in, right? Of any podcast ever, this might be the one that they're really chancing their arm.
Yeah, can we make sure, can we close the doors at the back? Because you know, we've got all sorts going on here. Whips, chains, the lot. Copenhagen is a safe word, by the way.
Thank you very much. Oh, that's Tommy's, actually. We're just going to quickly line the room with polythene and we'll be underway.
Thank you, David.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Esquire Townhouse. I'm David Flatman. This is Tom Shanklin.
Tom Shanklin.
All right, Tom.
Hi, Dave.
And we do as you guys will know, we do a podcast. We do a rugby-centric podcast, during which every week we're kind of obliged through, I don't know, by our agent and by the old sponsor to talk about rugby, even though it's a little bit token at the
end.
Can
we just check, do we have any podcast listeners here?
Well, presumably.
Yeah, well done. Just for those of you who listen to this, they made loads of noise then and put their hands up.
So you might ask, why are two washed up rugby players in the Esquire Townhouse doing a podcast with a special guest who you already know, but we'll introduce to the people who are going to listen to this later on, who is not a rugby player and is not an ex-rugby player. And the truth is, there is pretty much no justification for us doing this other than we like Tom on the telly and we think he's really funny and we've been trying to work out a way to get him on a podcast, any podcast. And rather than driving to the Seven Bridge services just outside Cardiff and sitting in the car park with us for an hour in the back of our car.
Which I was more than that.
Which he did.
I do that over a lot of weekends.
He just didn't want it recorded. He just didn't want it recorded. We've got him here.
Yeah, so there is a glass going around. If you could all put in £50 into that glass, please, we'd really appreciate that.
So with us, with myself and Shanks, we have Tom Davis, who is, among other things, well, a West Ham fan, a kind of newly converted, reborn, sort of born, or for the first time born, rugby fan, is very tall, is an actor, comedian, former scaffolder or builder? What are we saying?
I did a bit of building, scaffolding. I mean, I'd have lived with BAFTA winner, but...
No, I was getting there. I was getting there, mate.
I mean, you've got to grab the crowd, son.
I was getting there. And he's done some telly called Murder and Successful and some other stuff, and he's got a BAFTA. Tom Davis, everyone. Yeah.
Thank you.
I was going to get there.
I know, I was just like...
I was going to go scaffolding to BAFTA, because that, for me,
yeah,
works.
Then you're going to go, you know, stepping stone from this podcast was a league of your own, wasn't there?
Yeah. I'm weirdly very proud of some of the... I did the scaffolding on the Shard. So that is
something...
Oh, did you? Yeah. When it was first going up, I didn't see the topping off party, but yeah, I was there at the beginning. I was there for the footings.
Oh, really? That is actually true? You did the scaffolding?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
And it's still standing, so well done, you.
The proudest thing I've ever done, mate.
So, well, yeah. This is not where we want this chat to go, Tom. But because you're so tall, were you particularly valuable as a scaffolder?
I was an awful, genuinely a terrible scaffolder.
I was lazy.
I hated it as a job. I did it from 14, really. 14, 15, I was working scaffolding. So
cash and hands.
Let's keep that down to a minimum. Thanks, Shanks. Imagine if the tax people are drinking anywhere. It's probably in here.
Yeah, we're in a library, by the way. We're in a big library in a townhouse, Esquire.
It's amazing. Yeah, I mean, I never thought genuinely when I was scaffold, I'd ever be sitting anywhere as grand as this. The only club that I was a member of was one in Croydon, and Frank Bruno's parents used to come down there. But so scaffolding. Yeah, I was tall, I was strong, but I was terrible.
And you're lazy.
Lazy, yeah.
Fair enough.
I could take like a 6-hour shit. I could literally just find a port-a-loo and just...
Yeah, but you know what? It's like my old gran, God rest her soul, we all miss her.
She's like,
what she couldn't do with a 9-inch piece of metal. I actually didn't mean that. But as she always used to say, always shit on someone else's time. Get paid for it.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was you.
Yeah, pretty much.
Just, you know, we will be taking a break about 30 minutes into this. If you do need to go to the toilet or you want to... an e-cigarette or another drink, you know, so just bear with us on that. Sorry, it's just a...
And fire exits, any fire exits? Out the window, just go out the window. Be fine, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it looks like there's a balcony there.
Yeah, so you've got a bad knee at the moment.
I had a blood clot in my shin, and I had it taken out on Friday.
Ooh. Look, it's grown back.
I know, my leg.
Oh, sorry.
How do they do that?
They went inside, they pulled out a load of veins. It's a weird, I mean, you two are sportsmen, so operation-wise, the weirdest thing for me is that I was under like anaesthetic for like 3 hours, woke up, spoke to the doctor, and then realised like I didn't have any fucking pants on. That's the freakiest thing in the world. I was like, oh, thank you, sir. Like, thank you so much for what you've done. And as he walked off, and I was like saying to my wife, I went onto that fucking table with a pair of boxer shorts on. They're not fucking there anymore. Like, this is a weird fuck. Like, even I've shat myself.
Yeah.
Which is mortifying.
Yeah.
Or at some point they were like, do you reckon he's got a big dick?
Yeah. He's on a telly. Let's have a look.
Yeah, yeah. There's somewhere pictures of me.
There's going to be some selfies.
Yeah, but even like that. The thing is, though, like you worry about stuff like what's he done to me when I was under.
Genuinely, it was not something I ever thought. Oh, that's a fucking worry about.
No,
but I went private. I didn't think of all the things I was going with a serious blood clot in my leg.
Oh look,
I wonder if there's anyone's going to take a selfie.
That turns some
dick.
People on. That turns some people on.
A picture of me with Alf.
You know, he's I love the alien. You think my dick's called Alf.
No, it's more
but
along the
that's where I went with it.
The series of the alien Alf. In the 80s. I was, you know, it looks like.
But
a
if
penis.
You think like, I mean, you had a blood clot in your leg. You're in a lot of pain. Your life's under threat if it gets any more serious. So do you know what? I mean, I don't want to be too politically incorrect in this day and age. But so what if he took a bit of a liberty? He also sorted your leg out.
He did. You know, the other thing that was worse was when I went just before they're knocking you out.
You what?
Just before they're knocking out the anaesthetic.
I gotcha.
I was on the bed, I was chatting away, and one of the nurses was standing over me and looked at me up and down. He went, oh, for fuck's sake, we've got to turn him over. And I thought, what? Oh, I'm sorry, mate, that's your fucking job. You could have been like, yeah, I mean, that's how the dice roll, my son.
Did they get one of those cow harnesses and a helicopter car you got a crane in?
Running through the fucking ward. We'll be back up here.
It's tipping.
It's a fucking massive lump with a small dick. Get in.
Can I just mention, if you listen to this podcast now and you don't like swearing, please turn off now.
Yeah, right.
I am going to try and bleep as much.
Right.
But how long were you in hospital for?
No, I mean, I was out that evening and then, but I was knocked out. Like, generally, I've never had painkillers before. And it's sort of like taking over my week a little bit.
It's good though. You've got a bit of aggressive resting, you know. You can just watch a bit of telly.
Yes, yeah. But then it's a weird operation. Usually you do rest, right? And then you have to get up and you have to let the blood flow. So it's like every hour you have to go for a walk. And
that's unsustainable.
To be honest with you, I've never done it in my whole life.
That is unsustainable.
I've probably had four walks in my whole life up to now.
It's a shame that sorting your leg out also involved a suspected serious sexual assault. But I mean, otherwise the leg feels all right.
Yeah, I mean, he'll make some money out of those selfies one day, I guess.
Yeah, you keep going. You aim for the top.
I hope this is my hope for what happens is that his wife goes through his phone. Find pictures with him
playing with your genitals,
tiny penis, and like Billy. I don't think his name was Billy, but this is over. I'm out of here.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. You'll be going out the Shetland pony.
Who is she?
Behind
Sorry,
my back.
But you're all right. You're cracking on.
Yes, I'm getting through life okay now.
Right now, what we're gonna Shanks and I are very, very well prepped and professional before these things. So we've got a lot of. You won't know, listening to this at home, all of you listeners, you won't know, but we are surrounded by reams of notes, high-level notes. What we will try and do is work chronologically, week by week, through your entire life, from when you were born a normal-sized baby to now a giant man. But we will bounce off in different directions because we don't know what we're doing and we're not very well prepped and we haven't got any notes. But I would like to start by asking you when you first either realised you were funny. I know nobody wants to say they're funny, but tough shit, it's too late for that. You're on telly being funny. When did you first realise you were funny, and when did you first realise you liked people laughing at your jokes?
I suppose at school, just being a dickhead, just messing around. It was, I always think, and sort of akin to the comedy that I make now, was more than anything, was just pissing about at school and always getting more out of taking a piss out of someone or banter. And then I guess when you're sort of, I started working on building sites and probably very much like if you're a footballer or rugby player, you sort of sink or swim in a situation when you're working with a lot of adult men and the banter can be quite quick and it can be like you're straight away, you're thrown into it. So you're either going to be the idiot that your life's going to be hell with sort of, you know, Mickey taking and what's not. Or you give it back a little. So, I mean, like you say, it's a bit of a fucking knobby.
Especially when
you
stand out a little bit.
Yeah. Also, I'm 6'7".
Yeah.
And, I mean, that was... I remember turning up at parties, and there was a time in my life where there was a thing around sort of Sutton and Croydon to see who could roundhouse kick me in the face. And I remember, like, going to a party when I was, probably about 17, with a girl I really, really liked, and a fella being like charged out of his head and being like, any money I could fucking man ass kick you and knock you out. And I was like, oh, you probably could. Like, yeah, and he was
I'm
like,
nah,
fuck,
were
you saying I couldn't? And like, you seem to be asking me to pay you, to knock me out. And I was like, yeah, I'm sure. I was quite, whatever. And then he fucking did it. He knocked me out. The room cheered. I came to, and the whole room made out like it was a party piece that we did. He was like lording it up with the girl that I brought. Everyone was like, oh, mate, how funny was it when he knocked you out? And instead of going, well, it's akin to fucking child abuse, considering he's in his fucking 40s, off his fucking head.
And he's a black belt.
Yeah, I was like, oh, no, it was really cool. Yeah, it was really,
it was actually
really
Dolph Lundgren, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was just dreading never seeing him at a party.
And he took your missus home as well, which is even worse.
Yeah.
But who was like your influences then? Like, say, your comedy influences? Because like in sport, you have... your parents or...
Lineker,
or
Shearer, Beardsley, Scholes, Gerard. Yeah.
People Noble, like that. Who would be like your comedy influences when you were young?
I think like weirdly like Mike Reed. I loved Mike Reed as a sort of stand-up and my granddad used to sort of know him a little bit and so sort of Mike Reed. But then Billy Connolly was the big thing for me where... He'd sort of come from a similar background in the fact that, I'd sort of left school, gone straight into sort of working with him, sort of like industry and whatever. He'd been in the sort of shipyards and it felt like his leap to it was more along the lines of mine. So, yeah, but, Tommy Cooper, a lot of American stuff, a guy called Bernie Mac, I loved. I was obsessed with Eddie Murphy, Raw.
Raw,
yeah,
amazing.
Raw and Delirious, which now, weirdly, when you watch, you feel a bit disgusting.
I know, yeah.
It's not still up the test of time, is it?
No.
Like eclectic, really, I sort of loved like Mickey Flanagan and guys like that. Sort of took me under their wing early on.
Do you remember what your first job or your first comedy role was? Was it comedy first or acting first?
It was stand up. Genuinely, stand up was just something to break the monotony. Like I fucking hated my life. I sort of weirdly look back at it and. We'd sort of now talk about mental health and anxiety and depression, and I'd sort of done that. My life was pretty much going to work, scaffolding, doing something that you really felt sort of like this is. I'd look at guys in their 60s who are still doing it. Every day would be the same, every night in a pub, which sort of on paper doesn't look that bad, but when you're sort
it
of
is with, bad when you do it, yeah,
and you're surrounded by sort of a life that you think like it's got to be more than this. It was just something to. I just thought, I need to do something more than this, so I started booking a few gigs. In East London, South London, and just pushed myself to do more and more. So it was more than anything. It was like, I never sort of had any expectation, I still don't, of where it might lead.
Yeah.
It was just, I could give this a try, see how it goes. And quite quickly, I just sort of started throwing the work ethic to it. It's not rocket science. It is like, the more you do, like sportsman, whatever, the more you do it, the fitter you get, the fitter your brain gets. The more you're going to be, the better you're going to be it. But my ambition at the time was never, now I've done films, I've done incredible things, but it was never sort of a thing of going, oh, one day I'll make a film with Paddington. But
did you ever, when you...
Been to Peru, have you?
So Shanks and I do, rugby people and sports people end up doing lots of things kind of like this and at dinners and lunches, that sort of stuff, corporate stuff. And your job is to stand up there and talk about your story and your life before and playing rugby, but also generally it's expected that you are funny and you entertain people, and that can be actually very intimidating, especially when you're in a room where you don't get a lot back or when you're not used to it. Shanks, I don't want to speak for you, but I look at stand-up comedians and think that, all right, they're not in Afghanistan, but in professional terms, these are brave people.
But that was also my point. I remember the first year I did Edinburgh and having. And working with a lot of people who now are quite big names and people going out going, oh, I've got the Edinburgh flu and, oh, God, it's tough. I'm working a fucking hour a day.
Yeah.
You're working an hour a day, mate. You're not on the coal face here.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Let's be realistic.
Yeah.
It's not, you're not saving lives.
Yeah.
You're working, it's...
Try the Falaraki flu. That's worse.
I think I've had most of them, son.
Yeah. I had that in 99, didn't we, mate? Yeah,
but,
we did, actually.
But, really, and also, if you've done any other sort of job, it's... you should. I just loved it. For the moment I was up there, always nervous, but there was a nervous energy that you sort of can never really replicate with anything else. It was just fucking hell. This is better than lugging around metal on my shoulder.
Yeah,
this feels a lot more fun. And like you say, I could never believe how even now I find it really weird where people make out that sort of writing or entertainment is like the hardest job in the world. I think, well, no, it's that you're blessed to be able to do it, and it's, you know, there's a lot of people who haven't got this opportunity.
Get paid to have a crack, actually.
Yeah. Well, some of them to just smoke crack.
Just to smoke crack. That's actually after the pod. We can't do that on air. But
what
it's what we do. We're in London. It's what
you're
doing.
Half-time break is fine as well.
Have you ever been on stage and absolutely died and bombed hard?
Loads, yeah.
And how did it affect you?
Apart from today, all right? No stage, yeah.
I've found one person who's laughing, so I'm just looking at them.
Cheers, mum.
Loads, yeah. I think any stand-up comedian who hasn't is lying. I think you're nurturing something in it. I think any time you're trying to push yourself to do something a bit better and sort of grow your repertoire, so to speak, you're always going to take risks with what you're saying and doing. Some fucking horrible. I remember, I think the worst one was I was doing a gig in Liverpool. And these girls, no one was really laughing, and these girls were staring, and after the gig, I could see them sort of looking over. I was single at the time, and they're staring over, and I was thinking, oh, are they checking me out a little bit? And sort of trying to be quite, you know, hey. You
cool.
Know, yeah, cool.
What's up, from out of town?
Yeah. I'm just here for the night, just riding through doing some stand-up. And one of them came over to me and said, me and my mates were just over there talking about you. And I was like, really? Weird. You catch a show? And they were like, yeah. What we were saying is, we bet you've got a really hairy ass. The whole of the gig, that's all they fucking talked about. And it was mortifying. Yeah, but yeah. Tons and...
Is
yeah,
there, though? Is there
I look at you and think the same thing now you mention it.
I have got a really hairy ass. Yeah. I've tried to work with it. I've had waxy.
Sorry, Shanks, I only got a question, but I read this really interesting thing about a guy who had a really, really hairy ass, and his girlfriend found it disgusting, and he said, right... She's like, well, I groom and I take care of everything, so why don't you take care of business? You know, you look awful and I hate it, whatever it is. So he went to this place and had it all waxed, whatever you do, plucked. He went to an abattoir, I don't know what they do. But he went and had it done, had it all removed, and this documented the misery that followed. And it was basically like, what you don't realise is that that hair does a really, really important job. So it actually, because it gets quite hot down there, especially for the heavier gentlemen like you and Shanks, not like me. I've lost a bit of weight.
Yeah, now I've got weight issues.
Things get warm and you sweat a bit, and that actually stops sweaty surfaces rubbing together. So it stops chafe. It also absorbs. It does loads and loads of jobs. And basically, he described in great detail the agony he went through. You know that in between phase when you're growing your hair out. Well, that's the same around your anus horribilis as it is on your head. It doesn't look as bad because no one can see it because you've got pants on, but actually there is an agony there, so just stick with it.
Yep.
Be proud of what you've got.
I've been a fan of
yours
for quite some time. I've chatted to you now. That's the most fucking serious I've ever seen you. That's the most heartfelt thing. That genuinely felt like...
I worried about
you. Comic Relief tonight, we have a little bit of a different angle. Here's David Flatman. He's talking about hairy arses.
Listen, guys.
This is going to be sad.
The guy's about your height, your build, yeah?
Yeah. Stocky build. Yeah.
To try and draw it back now to something serious.
Apart from
the uses of arse hair. What was your first acting job? Because you've gone through the comedy sector now. You found out you're funny. You're making a name for yourself. What was your first?
I played John Landis with Lee Francis, who is Keith Lemon.
Yep.
So he would mate. Sort of, I'd sent him some videos and he'd see me and yep. So I did that for Channel 4. And then I sort of the pilot, it's that weird thing of when I got a thing called the BAFTA breakthrough. But I got that after 8 years of performing, and I was like the old, I felt like Rodney. You know, episode
46 at that point.
And it was like, you know, where Rodney goes to the Groovy Gang. Everyone else who was around me was like 22. Yeah. But I'd done it. The stuff with Keith Lemon was really my first. And then I did a thing called Morgana Show, which is like within the banking community is like quite a big thing because I played a sort of mouthy banker who took a lot of cocaine and rugby with a load of guys from New York who work on Wall Street, and then they would fucking Skype me when they were all fucked out of their heads going, hey, do the fucking character. And you'd be like, oh, yeah, hi. And we'll fucking put some money in your account. You'd be like,
all right, I'll do it.
Yeah, okay, I'm just in my pajamas. I don't give a fuck.
Take them off. Okay,
say
what's
something
the fee?
Disgusting. So that was the sort of the first stuff that... And then that was just all people you'd seen on train and sort of writing the sketches. And
then we sort of, we moved then into, is it Murder and Successful? would you say?
Yeah.
So has anyone here seen Murder and Successful? Good. Yeah, if you haven't, you need to watch it. It's not available at the moment, actually, on BBC iPlayer or any of the...
Well, it was BBC Three, wasn't it?
Yes.
That was on,
yeah,
and they can BBC Three.
But you can download it on the internet, and it's very easy and accessible.
Illegally
to do
stream
it.
I mean, yeah, it's there. Yeah, that was the first. Yeah.
Yeah. So can you explain to the viewers and the guys here what actually Murder and Successful
You're not viewers
is?
On a podcast. Because
it is a strange concept, but... It works.
You can't view a podcast, dickhead.
Well, there was a guy filming it.
We're videoing.
It was a show where we'd have celebrity guests on, and in a town built up of people doing celebrity impressions, there'd be a murder, and I'd play a cop, and we'd try and find the murder suspect, the person who'd done the murder. It was mad. It was ridiculous. One of those. Yeah, it was a sort of bit of a. When we pitched it, it was like, oh, this will probably never fucking work. It felt so like arcanic and unique and different. And subsequently, it became what it is. You know, three series and a stream of awards, a BAFTA. It was a lot of. It was a mad thing.
It's like a cross between Murder, She Wrote and Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yeah, I mean, is that fair enough? I mean, I've heard it compared to better things, but I'll take that, Shank. It was genuinely like just coming up with different stuff, like, you know, Cluedo and then the whole thing's improvised.
But you have a script. And
there's no script.
There's no script at all. No. Okay, so these celebrities come on, and basically the way I view
lazy,
it,
you see, lazy.
The way I view it is is that all you're trying to do really is make the celebrities who are trying to solve this murder as uncomfortable as possible and really trying to make them laugh.
Yeah, that was pretty much the aim. It just felt to sort of have some like chat shows and panel shows and hidden camera shows had sort of been so prevalent. It was a different way of getting, like, someone can be sort of honestly quite rawly themselves when they're put into a situation. And so we sort of make these, you know, like crack house. We put Mark Wright in what he thought was a crack house, and it freaked him out. And even though he knows it's a fucking TV show, was like, mate, I've never been in a crack house before. I was like,
of course you have.
You know that the BBC aren't letting us recreate. You know that they were both actresses.
There's a green screen behind us.
That's Sheila Hancock.
But I want to ask about a couple of the individuals you had on it. But first of all, something you say is like, we had these ideas and we do this. So you're doing it with someone else. So sort of whose idea is it? And how do these ideas become? Because how do these ideas become reality and become a TV show? So you said you sent videos to, I'm going to call him Keith Lemon because that's what I know him as, but you're sending him videos and you sort of go past, he recognises you and gets you into something, then you're past that stage and you're actually having ideas of your own. Is this you sitting in a room with other clever people writing ideas down, or is this just you? And who do you send them to, and who gives it the green light?
I was fortunate. I'd done a number of things. I'd worked with Coogan. I'd written with Coogan. I'd written with a number, like, my thing to this was I didn't come in with any education. So I came into this, you know, needing to know how to write a script, needing that, like, to how to format a TV show. So I worked with Walliams, I worked with Coogan, I worked with Catherine Tatt, I worked with a lot of good people to learn, to have that education. So when it comes to Murder and Successful, I was in a very fortunate position of, like, the channel were like, what do you want to do? And it felt at the time, if you're just going to do, like, a quiz show or, like, a sort of panel show or just a sitcom, it felt like try and do something that's going to make a bit of a splash. So and a lot of Murder and Successful was like my best pal James, of us drinking and genuinely fucking about and thinking, out what's the furthest you could push this? It was sort of a group of myself, a guy Andy Brereton, Avril Spirey, and we all sort of came up with different sort of entities of the show to build it up. But the main thing was for me was always like, how do you create something that's a brand that's going to sort of stick out in the modern climate of television that people are going to sort of take notice of, and you don't ever want to use the word a cult television show, but, you know, when you look at things like Boosh, and not everyone here might have seen Boosh, but it's an incredible bit of television that they made because it made them laugh, they enjoyed it. So it's always trying to make something different, and that was Murder and Successful was very much that.
Do you have a favourite, like a favourite episode or a favourite celebrity that come on the show? That...
Deborah Meaden was amazing, yes. Jamie Lang was just... I'd never met anyone as posh as Jamie Lang, but as lovely.
But you can't spell either, can you?
You met Mark Durden Smith a bit earlier. He's a posher, isn't he?
Yeah, Mark's up there. Yeah. Jamie was just like a joy. Because you're sort of sitting there and you think, is this going to work? And Jamie was like the first one where you're like, oh, fucking hell, wow. He is just, like, not, stu- not stupid, but he just went along with every bit.
You can say it.
But Dermot and Greg, Chris Kamara, and you know, and that last series with Richard Osman and Martin Kemp, and it was all of them brought something different. And what's great is that the show becomes them. It's not about us. It's about you. You impart your personality upon this, and we'll run.
But
with
are there scenes where you've just absolutely lost it? I mean, how many takes does it take?
No, it's all done in two takes. One, two takes. Because you lose the real... Because it's all improvised. It's all there in the moment. That if you start doing more than one or two, they know what's coming. And, you know, like that last... The last one we sort of maybe will ever do with Martin Kemp was he had no idea what the fuck was going on. He was generally like...
He was coming to a gig.
He said to me after the first
day... Where's my
brother? He was like...
Where's Tony?
Tony Hadley rocking up going, can I just get in this? Even if it's just the catering. Martin was like, it felt like being stuck in a lift and thrown up into the atmosphere, like, you know, Willy Wonka's lift, and just thrown around and having no idea, no control over it. Because he's just an actor, he's used to a script. And so all of a sudden be thrown into somewhere where you're like, oh, and we changed up every time with Martin to fuck with him. it was a joy, man.
Jamie Lang was just brilliant on it. And he's one of those blokes, because he's from Made in Chelsea. I'm getting that right, aren't I? Made in Chelsea. And you think it's pretty difficult, I would have thought, to be on that show and not be a knob. I would automatically think this guy's got to be a knob, even if they're not. And some of them, I'm sure, are and aren't. But he played in this charity rugby game a couple of years ago at the Stoop, and he played against some great players. And a guy called Brad Thorne, who played for the All Blacks, absolutely. I mean, this guy's he's your size and mean, and he was kind of the meanest dude in world rugby. He wasn't punchy or kicking.
He's an enforcer, isn't he?
Yeah, but he wasn't punching and kicking because that was. That's yesteryear a little bit. But in terms of physical domination, he was the guy. Like, the All Blacks took a long time to recover from him retiring. And he played, and Jamie Lang was going across the field, and he was properly up for it, putting in tackles. He was really, really getting stuck in. And we were thinking, great lad. And then he ran straight into Brad Thorne, and Brad Thorne absolutely buried him. Like, it was horrendous. And the game stopped. Remember watching it? The game stopped. It was like, holy shit. He's just killed a civvy. He has just killed a civvy.
And then all Louis Spence wanted to do was run into Brad Thorne then, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. But afterwards, I forget what it was. I'm going to ruin it now. But they interviewed Brad Thorne on the touchline afterwards. So was that a bit rough? Because he's 6'6 and massive and hard as you like. And he's nailed Jamie Lang, who's a midget. And he's like, you think that was a bit rough? And he said something like, he said, you put a wildebeest on the plains, the lion's going to take it down. Something like that. It's like, and he's like, this is your world? That's my world. That was it. So it's
like, in a way, you'd love to see it flipped and him thrown into fucking Made in Chelsea.
Yeah, exactly.
What the fuck is going on here? No, you wanted to fuck about this is my world now.
I'll have a beer. I'll have a beer. That's £11, please. Fucking what? Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I suppose in like a team environment, right, when you're in a rugby team and training and pre-season and everything, you know, you just try and stitch up your mates all the time. You do whatever you can to stitch them up. Real, real funny stuff like just, you know, doing their laces in double bows or...
Oh, mad stuff like
mental
that.
Mental stuff.
Putting
DP in their cycling shorts and stuff. I mean, do you do stuff like that with actors? Sort of when you're...
I don't know if David Jason would like that.
Anyone way to find out?
I mean, I'm generalising when I say DP in your pants, you know.
I found it, that was a weird thing of, because working... Like with scaffolders, working on a building site, it's probably similar to being, you know, in a rugby team or football team. It's a team environment where it is banter and tying someone up and putting them in a sack and hanging them over a scaffold. And all of a sudden, you are working with actors of note. I remember an actor saying, "Oh, it's like you've brought the building site to this film set." And it's
was it Julian Clary?
I recently,
I love Robert De Niro. Always have.
It's. I did the Bad Education film, and when me and Jack, there's a guy on it called Bruce McKinnon, who's a great character actor, and it was, you know. We all have trailers, and we got into this other guy's trailer, and I melted a load of chocolate and put it down the back of the pan in this guy's toilet. And I'd gone around saying, "Have you spoke to Bruce? Apparently, he's a bit run down. His stomach's got a bit of a bad stomach." Anyway, lunchtime comes. This guy goes in his trailer and he's like, oh my God, this is disgusting. This is disgusting. He's going belting out and he's like, have you seen what's happening there? And I'm like, what's happening? He's like, there's diarrhea everywhere. And I'm like, oh mate. Well, Bruce McKinnon was complaining of a bad stomach. And he's like, and I thought, yeah, this will, everyone's going to kind of get this as a joke. Next thing, the medic's there, the producers, and like Bruce is standing there. And going like, oh, genuinely, I feel a little bit ill, but I've not shat in anyone else's trailer. And the producer's going, I mean, this is disgusting. It's really, and the medic's going, have a seat, have some Imodium. And he's like, I'm not that bad. And like the good guy in me was like, I should probably go over and go, sorry, that was chocolate.
But you didn't. But
the prick in me was just watching it. And he could see that it was me. Yeah, it was. Yeah, so I always try and have a...
There is an unwritten rule on rugby tour. I presume there still is. You never use your own toilet for number twos. So you always pop into one of the other lads' room to borrow something or grab something, and you always, always leave it there. And you never use your own. But you've got to be very, very careful, because as soon as you do it to someone else, they've got a month to do one in yours. But the worst I ever heard, and I won't say any names because it's not fair, but it was Andy Hazel, who played for Gloucester. And he'd be listening to this. And I seem to remember him... And this is elaborate. It's the old toothbrush joke. Everyone's done the toothbrush joke where you do all sorts of horrible stuff with your mate's toothbrush and clean your dits with it and you take pictures. And when they get home and develop their camera, because in those days we had cameras, and you go and develop your film at home on your disposable camera after a tour, they'd have pictures of you cleaning their toilet and that sort of stuff with the toothbrush, right? Very, very funny. We all know that. But he wants, I'm led to believe, and if he's wrong, he will tell us on Twitter. If I'm wrong, this is how the story goes. He basically went to the lengths of getting a Swiss Army penknife from town, undoing the air vent in Bentos' room, Chris Bentley, who played for the Exeter Chiefs, and he undid the air vent, not the air conditioning, and produced something sort of reasonably soon after a heavy lunch, and laid it perfectly inside the air vent and did it back up. So Bentos had a month of cat hair blowing around his room. And every time he came down, he was just called shipbreak. And no one knew why. It was like all his clothes stank of it. We're training with him and you could smell it. It's like it's on his clothes. It was absolutely...
The worst thing is he got used to it.
Yeah.
We were filming in Bulgaria.
Maybe lived on
this
a farm.
Isn't a practical joke. We were filming in Bulgaria last year for a thing I did. And we get to this hotel and it is like... Fucking, it's so grotty. It's like beyond, you know, TripAdvisor is like, just don't fucking go there. And we're standing in the middle of nowhere. But then all the Bulgarian crew and the Bulgarian like actors and actresses were kind of like, you know, it's fine, it's okay, it's fine, it's all right. And you feel like, I don't want to be the prick going, oh, it's disgusting.
It's not what we're used
to. Yeah, you know, I'm used to better than this. So I go out to my room and there's a shit in my room. That has the rest of the room's immaculate.
Is it in the toilet?
Yeah, in the toilet. Yeah. There's two bathrooms, and in the ensuite, I had the superior suite, which was saying something. Like when I went to complain, the woman, "How do you like your suite?" I went, "It's beautiful, apart from the fucking shit in one of
the short goater."
So
that wants its back snapped.
I said, "Couple of otters down there." Lad.
Is there any way someone could go up and get that shit out of the toilet, please? And she was like, "I'm sorry, all the cleaners have gone home. It's." Maybe tomorrow. And I was like, you know what, cool. I'm tired. So I close the door and I go to filming. I come back the next day. The room is again immaculate. I open the toilet door and the shit's still there. I go down there. I was like, what the fuck is the shit still doing there? I asked for that to be...
No,
you think
shit.
I liked it there so much? I was looking from different angles going, nah. You know what? Let's keep that fucking thing there. Hey, not by reception. Sorry, I was wrong about that massive fucking piece. Can we keep that, please?
One of the worst things that ever happened to me was in Walkabout Bar in Cardiff, right? And you know, sometimes you need the toilet. You need number two when you're out because you've had too much cider or Guinness. And I've gone in there, and all the toilets are out of order apart from one. It's got no door on, and it's got no seat on, and there's just stuff all over. There's pubes, everything all over. And I've just thought, right. I have to do something. So I hovered, right? And obviously after a few beers, once you start hovering, you sort of lose a little bit
and
of...
And you get the burn, of, Quadzilla.
Of momentum. And I've just rocked back and I've sat down. I just got, oh my God. Just sat in it for the rest of it. It was absolutely disgusting. I just thought, oh, I've done it now.
Is there, just to clarify, is there a punchline here or are you just sitting on urine and pubes?
Punchline is I've still got burn scars around there.
Anyway,
we'll have to move on.
Tommy, this is a sports podcast, okay? Anyway, we're done about half an hour, 35 minutes. Have a quick break, after which we'll have another chat with Tom, and you guys can stick your hands up and ask whatever you like. Yeah. Go and refill your glasses and see you shortly.
Enjoy that thought. Cheers. Hello, guys. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. We're back for round two. If you're not here, put your hand up. Right, everyone's here.
Just so you know, Mark Durden Smith's Q&A with Clive has been cancelled, so you can all stay. Just a joke. Yeah. What was that? Durden's is looking great. I know, but he's just had his beard waxed. He's fine. Everything's fine.
And a free haircut. Well done, Mark.
Good luck, everyone. Nice week, Mark.
I just want to make out that we will be coming to the crowd for questions. If you've got a question for myself, that's fine. If you want for Tom as well, that's good. Or Dave. So think of some questions. We want to open up to you. That's what you've paid the money for. That's why you're here in the library in the Esquire Townhouse.
So I always love the bit where you say, so this is the bit where we put it to the floor. It's great. We're not going to do that, just in case. We might. Yeah, if you want to ask anything, stick your hand up, and you can ask any of us anything you like.
I mean, he's got one. You've got a question, haven't you? Do you have a question? About knees, was it?
There's a guy listening to the podcast going, what does that mean?
Yeah.
He's going to explain.
What do you mean? He's in a just massive knee.
Pretend we're on the radio and describe it to him.
He's in a pair of jeggings and his knees he's got ripped jeans.
It's you funny. Have perfect knees, by the way.
Yeah, they're lovely knees.
My knees don't look like that. They don't anything like that. But I look at this guy, it's funny because just before you said this guy's got a question,
I'm have to take a photo.
I clocked him walking over and I didn't see the holes in the jeans and the cool stuff. I thought to myself, is this guy real? Like the hair, the teeth, the face.
I mean, let's describe him. The knees aren't even the highlight.
No.
He's pretty amazing all over.
The whole setup.
That would be the fucking shit stick of all fucking shit sticks if you were born with amazing knees, but you were like so hideous that you had to sort of go, hey, can I get you a drink? Fuck off. Have you seen my knees?
Have a look at these. Get these. Get your laughing gear around these. But this guy we're talking to, I don't know if you have a question or not, but
Do you have a name to start with?
It's got Matt. Are you an Australian? Yeah. He's an Aussie as well. I knew. Oh. Do you like go surfing? And when you're at home, you just like walk around in bare feet and be cool. Up yours, mate. Let me tread on a stone. It's not
blood highlights as well. Do you have a surname just so people might listen?
Gambling.
That's the most. I thought you wouldn't have a surname. You'd just be called Matt.
What, do you have a surname?
You own that name.
No, his name's Matinho. Yeah. Matinho.
He's not going to need one.
Like Seal.
Just call him Matt, like Pele.
McLovin. Madonna.
Matt Gamblin
from Australia. So.
No, there's no question. No, you're just embarrassing you for. I feel like a. Because once is an incident, sort of doing it twice or three times is bullying, and I feel like we're now bullying this guy.
I think he'll get over it.
But he's looking at us going, you know when everyone's like, what do you do if someone's bullying you? You turn around and you smack them one. We will kick the shit out of you, mate, if you touch us, okay? We won't.
We'll go to all bar one after what he bloody clean up. We've got to
make himself feel better by having sex with all our wives.
Again.
As long as I can watch, I don't mind. But just drawing it back now, what are you up to now then? So what are the latest projects that you're doing now? Murder Successful was amazing. Success, Bill. Well done.
I thought you were writing in the break.
Well done on the old BAFTA, lad.
What are your plans now?
I started a production company with the guys who I made Murder and Successful with.
Okay.
So we're working on a number of things. It's sort of a thing where we have the guys had a go at me about how I hold my mic. he said, hold it like a penis.
At the end, like a spider.
Yeah, I was like, who holds their dick like this?
That's just impossible.
I mean, there's a doctor somewhere going...
you can't hold it in your teeth. That's how I hold it.
How am I meant to do a show like this?
Just behind your ear. I don't put it behind my ear. I always do a little Burt Reynolds or Tom Selleck like this. That's how I do it.
Anyway, carry on. That's disgusting. Carry on.
So, yeah, we're working on a number of I'm writing a number of projects at the moment.
It's not a pepper grinder, Shanks. It's a pepper grinder.
You're trying to make eye contact. You're an amazing physical comedian. You're lost on podcasts.
You're making reference to Shanks now.
The Night Walker.
Okay.
So, we're writing a number of things. I'm writing. So, it's I'm in that weird place where I can't talk about so much of it. We're Murder and Successful. We're talking about taking to the States and which was cool. And writing a drama for Sky, and which is sort of a bit
so
of a
serious.
It's got an element of comedy. It's sort of set around the America after the Civil War. Abraham Lincoln opened up sort of the most of America to the Homestead Agreement, and people from all around the world sort of came to America. It was a sort of beginning, in a sense, of the American dream, but brought a lot of sort of crime and a lot of sort of, you know, the racial aggression that you see now. So, yeah, it's a bit of a sort of turn away from what we've done before, but it's been a lot of fun researching that now.
Is it always comedy, do you think you'll do, or do you think you'll do a lot of sort of serious dramas?
I'd
shit as well.
Yeah, I'm going to make a lot of shit. I've won a BAFTA now, so I'm going to add to it. You can oblige me that. I love making comedy. We've just done a thing with BBC One, so hopefully that goes. And yeah, so we're as a company, yeah, we like making people laugh. We live in very turbulent times. I think it's fair to say, as an expert, the world is a little bit fucked. And it's nice to sort of, give some little bit of escapism and something for people to laugh at. I've set that up. I mean, my thought is, like a sportsman, you're not always going to be flavour of the month, flavour of the year. So have a company that's not just me-centric. You're working with different writers, sort of bringing in people from disadvantaged backgrounds, people who might never have been given that chance before, like myself, to sort of bring them in to sort of, you know, give them a voice.
Do you find yourself actually mentoring other people yet? Are you at that stage?
We've got a couple of lads who sort of have come through sort of from sort of gang backgrounds, and they're writing a thing at the moment about knife crime, which is very prevalent. I got guys kicking off at the background. That could have been Matt. We could pretend that was Matt. Let me fucking back in.
They do like me. It was a joke. It was banter.
If you haven't paid, get out.
So mentoring it and bringing through a generation of people sort of is very important, and I'm really enjoying that side of it as well, having a company and sort of building that up.
And Murder and Successful going to the States sounds brilliant, and it's one of those things like when you must hate getting compared to other series, but it's inevitable, isn't it? When Robbie Williams tried to break this up, but when Oasis failed, when The Office went over and everyone's like, it's not going to work, and it worked brilliantly. It was slightly different, but it worked brilliantly. Have you got in mind adaptations, sort of Americanizations you will make to Murder and Successful, or will you say, this is how we do it, do you like it or not?
Yeah, I mean, Murder and Successful works on the basis of it feeds into celebrity, right? And I think, you know, America loves that side of things. There's sportsmen over there that you want to do it with. There's you know, the Kardashians and whoever else we've. So we're already talking to quite big celebrities. And because a little bit, I guess, you know, the people who've brought the show from us are massive hitters, the big hitters over there. So we're sort of in great company. So my thing with anything is evolution. It's like, you win a BAFTA over here, that's your third series. It's like, where can you take it from then? You don't want to, it's maybe the format's starting to creak, maybe things aren't working as well as they were. So, you know, let's try and make it big, let's try and make it better, let's just up the level. So, you know, that can happen over in America. I've got no real intention I like England. I've got no intention of going out there.
It's too hot over there. Like for a bigger man, fucking, it's too hot.
Oh, man. Can you imagine? Yeah. I find it hard having a call with them. Everything's so... I'm not a cynic, but, you know...
They're so positive. It's not real. They all cry themselves to sleep at night.
Yeah. It's like the biggest seller of fucking antidepressants. Right. But, like, oh, my God, everything's amazing. It's really not.
Yeah, loads of stuff. Loads of it's rubbish.
I'm a callus on my ass. It's not amazing.
Loads of it's rubbish.
God save the Queen. You're back here. Could you just give us one little soundbite of D.I. Sleep? Come on, please, just what? Because
such a weird thing out of context.
I know, but if you want to look at me in the eye as well, then
that's even weird.
Hold my hand, Tom.
Essentially, sounds like a creepy older perverted version of Jason Statham.
That's why I like it.
I'm thoroughly enjoying being here with all these fine people. It's so much fun.
Brilliant.
That'll do it.
Yeah. So that's just my personal pleasure.
That was indulgent.
You're obviously a larger gentleman. Probably shopping high and mighty. Amongst other jam.
I can get around not shopping there.
Oh, really?
I find it such a
say that,
weird
you look
thing.
A fucking mess. You should shop there. No, you look great.
I should get some old jeans and holes. I find it weird that there's always really small people who work in high and mighty.
Yeah. They can't relate.
Yeah, but it's like, why the fuck have you given your life to clothing big people? Like, that was your dream. It's like your hand is saying back, like, I've always had clothes that fit me.
Yeah.
I'd like to pass that on.
It's like your mentoring.
Fuck off, you little prick.
It's like you're mentoring other kids from Croydon and Thornton Heath. They're just giving something back.
Everything's a little schneidy. It's like not quite. I mean, they're better now because Boss is there and Ralph. But before it was like, oh, you'll have to try Mouth Paren. And it's like, it was all just there.
I mean, this is a sporting podcast predominantly. Were you at all sporty through school? High jump.
You can take a roundhouse like no one's business.
Yeah, I was an amazing punch bag. I boxed a bit.
I
play football, but weirdly I went to a school where rugby wasn't a thing in London. It's not a working class sport, so to speak.
When, is it the Sylvia Young School of Acting?
Yeah, I didn't go there either. Jesus.
RADA, we hardly play any rugger at RADA.
I always think rugby. I had a long time of whenever I'd be out and about, people would assume that I should play rugby. I'd always be accosted by a sort of posh guy in Richmond going, oh my God, why aren't you out there? Yeah. You should. I think it takes more than just being big. I can't run. I can't catch. I'm terrified of every gun out there.
I was going to say you're aggressive enough to play that.
But you are, I know you are a rugby fan. You're getting into that. We'll talk about that in a minute. But
well,
you are
to say that,
originally he? Football, aren't you? And you're, am I right in saying you're a West Ham fan?
Yeah.
And are you kind of an obsessive, do you love the game as much as when, you know, you did 20 years ago?
No,
how
I mean,
big a football fan are you?
That's the thing with rugby, I think, is that I was obsessive. I loved football. I spent a lot of time going to West Ham home and away, and then sort of very much got disillusioned by football and the sort of 90s, the early part of this, the noughties, so to speak, were great, but you sort of then get disillusioned by it becoming commercialised. It's not the same club. West Ham certainly isn't as it was. And then actually, you sort of then get, sort of buy more into rugby. The day out of rugby's less. I was going to West Ham, and as without sounding a bit like a wanker, like slowly, you'd sort of get accosted by the fans. I went to Tottenham away with West Ham, and I had so much grief. Whereas you go to rugby and you watch Ireland, England, or you watch Wales, Ireland, whoever, everyone's great. You generally, to the man, you're having a laugh. It felt like, wow, this feels a lot more socially acceptable, and it feels a lot more fun. And also, you're not, it feels like a real. I've got massively into Gaelic football. I'm obsessed with it at the moment.
Hell of a sport.
Crazy,
amazing,
right?
Where can you watch that on TV, though?
Tough, it's on Sky.
Oh,
it's on Sky now, and it's great
because
you can only play for the county you were born in. So it just takes out money, and it's the commitment to that. I love that. I think it's amazing. And
it also means it's definitely tribal. And you're definitely defending your hometown.
Mayo have a curse put on them. My family's from Mayo. They have a curse that they were rushing home from a game once, and they drove in. You know the story. They drove into a funeral cortege. They basically joined a funeral cortege, a gypsy funeral cortege, and a gypsy woman put a curse on the Mayo team that if until everyone on the bus was dead, they could never win the Gaelic game. Something thing. So basically. Like, and everyone's like, oh, that's fucking mad, right? But last 3 years, they've been in the final, and like they played against Dublin. I think they leaned about three fucking goals, and they gave them away within like the last 5 minutes. And it's like, literally, there's people in Mayo going, we'll have to fuck, there's two of them left. They'll have to fucking end this, man. Their families, like, with picket fences round going, you're not coming in. It's crazy. And that's tribalism.
And you're basically like sports where foreigners haven't ruined it then, yeah?
Put
my teeth back in.
No, I was going to say, you're going to make a scathing point. Think about it and then say it.
Yeah. I don't work like that.
I love foreigners in the game.
There's a guy that you might not know, but Shanks and I know, and people in the room will know, a guy called Ben Ryan, who's a famous sevens coach, so seven-a-side rugby.
He's ginger, so I like him a lot.
Yeah, he's all right.
Are you ginger?
He's not, but he's, yeah, but he's like, he's like, Shanks, where is your translucent, he's kind of glows, he's like red auburn, and he tans, he's a ginger that tans.
Yeah, he's a daywalker.
Yeah, my favorite kind of ginger day, yeah.
They're
no
the best ones
for that.
They're not as strong, but they are better to look at. So anyway, he went to coach Fiji, which is his big departure, because Fiji are the most natural sevens players in the world. It's a national sport, the most talented athletes at sevens, but they're completely disorganized, and sometimes they're brilliant, sometimes they're useless, sometimes they're up for it, sometimes they're not. He went over and was their first proper full-on pro coach.
They must have looked at him and gone, wow, yeah. What are you?
What are you?
Are you a human?
This lovely story about he turned up and one of the first training sessions, I think, again, he'll tell us on Twitter if I'm wrong, but I think there may have been a night out the night before and whatever, and it's like how many of the lads are going to turn up, because there, you know, not everyone turns up on time, a bit more relaxed, Fiji time. And the captain or the best player, one of them, maybe that's the same person,
Serevi.
wasn't at training. Who is it? The captain wasn't at training.
What's his name, if you're joining
what
in
was
this?
His name, if you know?
Okay, all right.
All right, fine. So Chief, whatever his name is, we don't know his name, do we? He wasn't at training, so he said, right, I think it was Samu or something, or Sammy. Where's Sammy? And he says, Sammy's back in the village. Sammy's back in the village. He's meant to be at training, back in the village. Right, I can't have this. I've got to assert myself now. So he gets in his car, drives down to the village and says, where's Sammy? Oh, he's in the next village. Okay, so he goes to the next village. Where's Sammy? Oh, he's in the kitchen. What's Sammy doing in the kitchen? He said, he can't get up. He's on the floor. He gets there and he walks in and he's just having a lie down. And they're like, why aren't you at training? So I can't. Someone from the next village cursed my legs. Stop working. So ask God about it. Not my fault, mate. I'm not training today. It's like, genius. What could you do? What's a ginger bloke from Surrey going to do about that?
And also, what an amazing excuse if you've so known that at school.
Yeah,
I live near a gypsy site. They put a curse on my brain. I can't do homework.
Yeah, right. Can we put our hands up if you've got questions? Right, I'll come over to you. I want you to say your name.
Your number.
Where you're from and your questions. Just
I want to know what he does.
Recognised.
Gareth, I'm from Greenwich. My question is, what is your go-to karaoke song?
Okay, Gareth. Greenwich.
You know, I never have said you were called Gareth.
No, I know.
Out of all the names. I've been looking at you thinking, that's not a Gareth.
That's a Steve, if ever I've seen one.
Yeah, a but Steve. What, I'm going Steve. Is,
or it's a great name. It's a
I
great
love
name.
Gareth.
But before we answer the question, how many male children, or female, likely to be male children, do we think in the last 12 months in the UK have been called Gareth? I'm going something zero. Something like zero.
I actually think it's a good, proud name. It's like a lot of them. I prefer it from Dean.
Oh, yeah, God, yeah.
I mean, what I will say...
Yeah, fucking see it. I'll tell you what, I'm phoning up a fucking expert on anything, right?
Yeah.
Cars, whatever. If it's like, hello, you're speaking to Gareth, I'm like, I'm in safe hands.
Yeah.
But Dean. I phone up and go, you're speaking to the Dean. Oh, I've got a renegade here. This fella's going to pull my pants down. Yeah. Gareth's a strong, dependable people.
What I will say with your name, there's no E in Davis. And that messes me up.
Yeah, no,
it's Davis. It's not Davies. Why chuck an E in there if you want to call it Davis? It's Davis, strong name, Tom Davis.
Yeah.
Does what it says on the tin.
Thank you very much. That's very kind of
you.
Also,
song.
It's also a shame that Clive Woodward, he was in the room, it's a shame Clive's gone.
Sir.
Because Sir Clive, I don't think there will have been anyone named Clive in the UK since... I don't know, in two decades. It's like, and it's not for the same reason that the name Adolf died out. It's not for the same reason. But I don't know anyone called Clive under the age of 50. My dad's called Graham. Does anyone know a Graham below 45?
No.
No one does.
It's a big choice. If you look down at your kid, I mean, you're saying to you when you look down at your kid and when you're with your wife and you go, I think we've got a Graham here. Your wife is like, I've carried that for nine fucking months.
Are you thinking what I'm
That's
thinking?
A lot of things. Yeah. That's not a fucking Graham or a Clive.
Yeah,
that's a Gordon.
Garrett,
that's a Gordon. Look at him. He's Gordon all over.
Mitch.
Right, go to song, karaoke.
Karaoke song.
Drawing it back.
I like Stuck in the Middle with You. I'll roll with that.
That's nice. Yeah, it's nice. I'd go Sugar Hill Gang, Rapper's Delight. Oh,
wow. All right, ask me.
No, I'm all right. Don't care what yours is.
Might be,
what's yours, Tom?
Don't worry, be happy.
Oh, wow. That's beautiful, Shanks. Just,
no, because you could do the voice as well. Here's a little song I wrote.
I don't know.
My wife will sing
I don't know if you can do the voice.
I think it's best you don't.
I think it's it's a room splitter, mate. I'm going to give you that.
He was Australian, wasn't he? Right, any other questions? Come on.
But before you do, or as you're about to, I remember going for a lads' weekend, and we picked somewhere. Where can we get a train to from King's Cross when everyone finishes work on a Friday? So we went to Nottingham for the weekend, went to the races and whatever, and good weekend. But on the Sunday morning, we all went for a full English, went for a breakfast, so whatever you want. We all had a full English because we're bloody lads. And air of the dog, just actually some orange juice. And when the waiter walked over, there's about 15 of us there, and a mate of mine, Tomo, said, right, when the waiter comes over and asks, you've got to order your breakfast in a different accent or a different voice, and everyone's got to do it in a different one. So you want to get in there first. Yeah. and like just say full English, please, mate, because that's an accent. You want to get in there first. And we got all the way around to my mate Jake. He's very dry, and he just said, "I'll have a full English, please." And they said, "Would you like brown or white bread?" "Brown, please." And we're like, "He's not doing it. He's not doing it. How do you want your eggs?" And he just went, "Poached." Anyway, it doesn't sound that funny. It does, because it was.
I liked it.
It was one of the great moments of comedy genius.
Questions? Any questions? There's a guy on his phone there. Were you Googling?
Who is she?
Do you want a question?
Who is she? It's not, right.
By the way, you said that for sure. we're all going to go, "Yeah, go on, mate. Having an affair. Good on you."
Go on, mate.
Just kept swiping right before he put in his pocket.
Have you done any dating apps?
No. Luckily enough, I was with my wife long before they became... I feel for people who have to... I think it's all gone too far.
If I was single, I reckon I could look a lot better on a photo than in real life.
Well, I don't know.
Hang on.
Take glasses off.
The
worry is you look like me.
This is inappropriate, but it's true, so I'll tell you. And it's not. No one's recording, are they? No, anyway. So they are.
Hold on, is this about me?
Yes. And me.
Fine.
And me. Years and years ago, Shanks and I lived together when we played at Sarri's, and the internet was still like...
It was a two-bed flat.
Two-bed flat. Carry on. And there were these websites that were not dating apps, because there were no apps then, but they were websites where you sign up, and it was like... One of them was called something dodgy, the other one was called Adult Friend Finder, and we thought, this is going to be hilarious. We'll go on there, and we'll try and like pull, and we'll write a profile of ourselves, and I'll suddenly be 6'3", or whatever it is, and I'll have got a Colgate smile, and we'll... And two things are worth mentioning. One is that, firstly, you would never do it. You wouldn't put your face on it, especially not if you're playing rugby every week on the TV and there's a chance somebody might recognise you, even though we weren't very good at that stage. Yeah. It was like, fine, we're still on the telly
your
every week.
Mum or your dad to start with.
Yeah, exactly. Did not want mum finding me. Shady Grafter 69, that was someone else's, another our friend. Anyway, we had these profiles we put on there and I remember putting a photo on and it was like, I just got a generic photo of somebody with... Not an amazing body, but definitely a significantly better body than mine, and like cut him off from the head upwards. So it's like, this is what you're getting, ladies. But the face is a surprise. It obviously wasn't me. And I remember Shanks just put a picture of him playing for Wales. Flat out. There you go. Some of that.
Legally, I want to say that never ever happened.
We never met up with one human being from any of these sites. We did it really for the profile creation, and the fact we got no bites is nothing to do with the fact that we didn't meet up with anybody.
The weirdest thing: a friend of mine, she was on Tinder and came across a match or whatever it is, and the guy had used, you know, when people stop you and get a picture with you, had stopped and he'd used a picture of me and him as his as his Tinder picture. And it's a picture of me and him like that. And she screen grabbed it and was like, this is fucking weird.
This will do it.
It's like every picture that he's got, he's like, I really like this one.
He must have thought he looked good next to you. You made him look
good.
Just
a woman who just loves improvised comedy. Just like, oh, wow. Yeah, he's rolling with some average comedians.
I remember with this buddy of mine, I won't say his name. I actually won't, Dave. But he went on one of these sites and he put up a deliberately rubbish fake profile just for fun. And he Googled like male model, American male model, and got some cheesy guy. Looked just like you, actually. Not cheesy, you look lovely. He looked just like you, Matt. So he had perfect hair, tan teeth.
Great knees.
Blonde hair. He looked nothing like my mate who had a big nose, double chin and black hair. And he called himself Steve Stevens from Stevenage. And he put it on there, and it was like height 6'5", weight 198. You know, it's kind of like, it was just complete sham. But people saw it. These women were all over once. He's like, this girl has literally sent me a message, and he's like, yeah, it's not me in the photo. It's a joke. I was only set it up for a joke. And she's like, you're amazing. I want to meet you. And he's like, look, it's not me in the photo, but if you want to meet, that's fine, but I don't look like that. And she's like, I want to meet you. So anyway, we all went down to the Puzzle Pub in Elfield, and we sat on a table next to this girl walked in, and she walked to the table, and she said, you are not Steve, which is a Polish girl. Anyway, he went out there for 6 months. So there you go.
I always found it weird, the disappointment of someone that had actually seen you and then you met them for a second date, let alone turning up and seeing you for real, like if that was a complete shock. Going, fuck, you are not that guy. I will say it's you in Matt's defence as well, as long as he's very handsome. He's also very affable and lovely. I would say he's laughed along. He's been a real.
He seems like a nice man.
He's got animal, head of a catch.
He's got animal hairs on him as well, so he likes animals.
He seems like a nice man, but they are off on the ones, aren't they?
Doctor, you've got animal hairs on him. I actually saved the dog's life on the way over here.
Well, he's got a cashmere top on, and they attract hair more than
it fell into
tops,
the river in London. It fell into the
Generally,
river.
You'd have been incredible murdering successful. Yeah, like, yeah.
I'm grooming
it's
you.
It's like Sherlock. My animal hairs, it looks like.
We found some animal hairs within him.
Quick swipe to the knee, he's down.
Very, very poor laying floors. I'd go give him that. His knees are too nice.
I think it is. It's probably time to wrap it up, unless anyone wants to stick their hand in the air. And yeah, go for it. There we are. I'll come to you.
Go over, Dave.
Go there.
No, wait, save it. Go.
You're off to the US with Modern Successful. Who would be your ideal guest? And I want to know you two, Flatsy Shanks. Who you'd want to see on there?
I want to know your name first and where you're from.
James from Andover.
No, second name?
Dawson.
Okay.
James Dawson from Andover was not texting his wife earlier. That's for sure. That's for sure.
He's now pointing a gun at us, just so you know.
That'd be like the weirdest murder ever.
He's just sprinted.
Right, bang, 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 and then slowly.
I mean, can I just
Can we all keep this a secret?
What a great place. What a great location this would be for a murder as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine there's been murders here before.
Dr. Flatman.
I hope
battered.
And if they haven't, there'll be loads of murders within like 100 metres of here. It's London.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
so many people will have been brutally killed near here. Anyway, what was the question? Wow. The question was, US, who's your ultimate guest?
I've always wanted. I think David Beckham would be fun. I think I've always thought he'd be quite. I think he's quite a good sport.
Good bloke.
I think he'd be a fun guy to sort of go along with the ride. So yeah, I'd say him and I don't know. I love Tyson Fury as well. He's insanely fun. So yeah, one of them. Yeah, he'll be great.
Is he fun, funny, or does he? I'm not going to say is he a something. Is he fun or does he need help?
I think he's in the probably just about the smartest, as this might sound, some smartest man in sport. He's managed to come back, two fights, earn £40 million in a fight for a fight, just principally on whether he's crazy, whether he's funny, whatever he is. He's basically built a whole. He lost everything two years ago. No one would have booked him for anything. Within two fights, he's put himself into the biggest fight probably in the heavyweight division for years. And whatever happens at the end, he can't lose because he's had two fights. So Wilder knocks him out, he'll become the biggest pundit in this country and in the world, probably in boxing. Or he beats Wilder, he's got the key to the kingdom. So, yeah, I think he flits on the sides of madness.
What's that got to do with it?
Well, I love it.
He's a gypsy and all.
Well, you could pay him in traveller's checks, is what I'm saying.
Jesus Christ.
Have I ruined it now?
Is he? He ruined that.
I can imagine what you were like at school. Like the kid just whispering in your ear and the teacher going, sorry, what's going on over there?
Yeah, but it was Shanks, you were saying the day he was next to, he was doing a golf event or something, and whoever he was doing a Q&A with kept getting lost for words, and Shanks just keeps whispering tits in his ear. It's a corporate
Evans.
Event, you know.
He kept getting lost for words, he couldn't think of words, so I was just going like that in his ear, tits. Vagina.
Exactly.
I would like to see someone like Gary Neville on it.
Oh, yeah, he'd be fun.
Because he's super serious. He's such a good pundit. And there's no point. Well, there's, I like the ones that aren't actors on there. So you get proper mode of them. Because
He'd be fun.
Obviously, actors know how to act and they can turn it on when they want. You know, like you can cry on cue flat.
Of course, if Gary doesn't make it, we can all just have Phil in reserve. So,
exactly. Or his dad, Neville.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, this is Dad, Neville.
Well, everyone, he also passed away.
Not everyone knows. Did he?
That'll probably not make the edit, I imagine.
Well, I edited it.
Google
so
it when we're done.
In a different voice. Whom we recently lost. May he rest a bit.
We could do it again. If it wasn't Phil, then his sister, all right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, his sister there. England football
netball
coach.
Netball.
Yeah.
Sisters, right? Probably. Yeah. Yeah, the thing.
I'm just watching.
The ultimate guest. Then I'll come to that in a sec. The Tyson Fury thing. Another thing I wonder is, you know, you're saying he's. I mean, unquestionably, him going from being completely out of shape with nothing, two fights later, one of the biggest, highest-paid athletes of the year globally, is unbelievable. I mean, good on him. And I'd love him to win. I'd love it. But I wonder if it's a little bit like the Jordan thing, the Katie Price thing, where people always used to say, "Do you know what? she's not just fit with a massive set of fake boobs. She's actually a very intelligent businesswoman. I say bollocks. That's not true. I think she's not a very clever
she's
person.
Got
she's
what?
Got people around her, and she looks amazing, so people buy all of her stuff. I'm not convinced Tyson Fury is the commercial brain that you're saying he is. I think he is just mental.
Is that because you've seen aerial shots of Katie Price's house and her swimming pool?
Katie Price
pot.
Sold loads of calendars and magazines because she's super fit for years
and she
years
sold
and
the
years.
Horse like, box. Is that what you're saying? She's
had
to sell
a
horse
box. That's why she
box.
Sold stuff. Like, is this a commercial brain that we can't see? I'm just.
I think it's an unfair comparison to compare him to probably one of the most least talented people. I think as a boxer, he's a I think he's a talented boxer. I think whether it is, I think how he's played it. I think you're right. There's no doubt in that there's an element of crazy to him. But to get in the ring anyway, if you've boxed, is always you're going to need a bit of that. For me. Like I genuinely believe there's a part of me that thinks he could do it as well. I don't think that Wilder's ever come up against anyone like him. No. I think you take it back to he was in better shape. You take it back to that Klitschko fight, Klitschko never even laid a glove on him really, I think it's going to be an incredible sporting event. But like I say, I don't think he can lose. I think you've got to kind of salute him to have made himself a credible
and
challenger.
Would absolutely love it if he won, would love it. Right. I would love it if we beat them, love it. My ultimate guest on American Murder and Successful, or any Murder and Successful, would probably be Sharon Horgan. I don't know if you've done anything with
Sharon.
She's
incredible, she's amazing.
She's absolutely
We haven't
amazing.
Got one American. Kim Kardashian.
All right, Donald Trump, there you go, fine.
Oh God, no, Jesus.
Or someone, or that American guy, whatever you want. Steve Carell's very funny, I think.
Yeah. It's weird with comedians though, because comedians can preempt it more. It's always, I think, as actually, like you say, it's
Alec Baldwin.
People who are again a good actor.
Tom Hanks. I'm just trying to think of stuff. Cary
Grant.
Just
saying,
loads.
Cary Grant.
But anyway, look, I think that's drawing to an end now.
Oh, another question. So one more,
okay,
my lady.
Well, okay.
All right, Tom, just be gracious, will you, for Christ's sake.
Okay.
What's your name? Where are you from?
Zara. I'm Irish, but I'm living in London, basically.
You are welcome. You are welcome here. Just can't understand a word.
Where
in
Ireland are you from?
Well, get on with it.
Huh?
Cork.
Oh, Cork's
Munster.
Amazing. Yeah.
Hopefully we win this weekend.
no chance.
I know. Well, it's a sports broadcast, so... Sports-related question.
Yes.
What do you think about Joe Marler retiring?
Joe Marler retiring from England rugby. What do we think? So Joe's 28. He's got 59 caps. He's got definitely got another load of caps in him. He's the sort of guy that's so durable. You could see him getting 80, 90, 100 caps. He's that solid, that reliable. I think it's one of those things where people say personal reasons. Joe's, I think, pretty comfortable elaborating on that. And not what people have got to remember. Remember what you like. To play rugby for England now, you get paid a lot of money. It's all relative, but if Joe's giving up a load of caps leading into the World Cup, he would likely be in every match day squad leading up to the World Cup and throughout the World Cup or close to it. And then going on after that, I mean, he's comfortably, they've said in the papers, but comfortably giving back £500,000. Bear in mind, sponsorships and endorsements will be affected too because he no longer plays for England. And I think he genuinely felt like he didn't fit in that environment, loads of pressure, and yes, I'm good enough, but I don't enjoy it. I'm here because you're meant to love playing for England. You're meant to love getting paid all this money. And he said, actually, from what I gather from people that know him better than I do, he loves being at home or knocking about with his wife and kids. He loves it. And he thinks, I'm away the whole time. And you know what? What I'm doing is stacking up caps and stacking up cash, and I'm all right with that. Maybe I'll have a bit less money when I stop. So what? I'll go and do something else. I'll back myself. He's a bright bloke, loads of charisma. And I think it's actually a brave decision.
He's sure sort of the Greatest Showman. I don't know if you've seen The Greatest Showman.
No, big time.
Anyone here? Anyone that's seen The Greatest Showman? Greatest Showman. He basically aims for the moon. He aims to make this massive show. Finds himself not spending any time with his wife and kids. Worst mistake he ever made.
Nearly has an affair on the way.
Nearly has an affair. Cancels the show. Goes back. Less money, happier with his wife and kids. There we go.
So,
I mean, James, I actually genuinely like you, mate, and whatever's happening at home, I hope for you.
So, Flat, what we're basically trying to say, he's sort of evaluating whether it's the time or the money, and he's gone for the time spent with the family.
I like it.
Yeah, no, it's a fair...
Nice
because
gesture.
When you are involved in international rugby, it does take a lot of time out of your schedule. you know, when you're training, when you're playing, the pressure's on. You're spending a lot of time away from your family with tours, with World Cups. So he's weighed that up, and he's seen his time at home more valuable than the money he's getting playing for England.
Tell me about it. I missed everyone at home so much when I was at the World Cups.
You're bed sores, didn't you? Right, anyway, Flats, we're going to have to wrap up now. This has been absolutely amazing. Thank you so much for coming, but I'd love you to put your hands together for...
BAFTA winning
Tom Davis. Please.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, everyone.
Yeah. Please subscribe and write a review as well. Thank you.